Yeah, I guess it's working.
Great. Should we start?
Yeah, definitely.
Could you start by introducing yourself?
I am Roxy Matthew Cole, climate scientist at the Indian Institute of Tropical Meteorology. I work on climatic changes, climate variability in the tropics, particularly in South Asia. South Asia is a poster child of climate change with all the heat waves, extreme rains, all kind of extreme weather events we are facing. I also focus on the larger Indo-Pacific region and the changes over it.
Right. So the idea of this episode is, what if we could pick a climate-safe location in the next decade or so? So it's hypothetical, and I'm trying to understand if we can have apps or tools where, you enter a location and it tells you immediately what the various climate challenges are for that location, and then sort of like you see on real estate websites where you can compare different properties side by side, and then you can
Right.
compare different properties or locations and see what risks each of them have, and then choose what risk you want to take.
Right.
So my first question on that note would be, how much temperature rise have we already seen, and India specifically, and how much are we expecting in the next decade or so?
Right. So, do you want me to? You started asking about climate-safe location, but you don't want me to talk about that right now, I guess.
Not right now. I'll come back to that. I was
Huh.
just putting the
Okay. You're
context.
warming up, just like the climate is warming up. Right,
Yes.
right, right. So, if you look at a global scale, yeah, the global temperatures. What we generally talk about is the global surface temperatures in general. The global surface temperature change since the pre-industrial, that is the 1850s or so, or the last 150 plus years, is about 1 degree Celsius, 1.1 degree Celsius. And that's what we are trying to keep it down, that change from the global average and below 1.5 degree Celsius within next few decades, or 2 degrees Celsius within the next several decades. Yeah, that's a global change. Now, for India, our institute, the Indian Institute of Tropical Meteorology under the Ministry of Earth Sciences, we had done a similar climate change assessment as the IPCC does for the globe. And what we see is a temperature change. No, again, this is is the all India average surface temperature change. Yeah, so that's around 0.7 degrees Celsius, which is lower than the global temperature change. But when if you look at the recent period, but we see that the temperature changes over India has in fact picked up. Yeah, but at the same time, this do not represent the changes that we see in extreme weather events in terms of heat waves and other extreme weather events. Now, I would point out another important aspect that affects India, yeah, that is the Indian Ocean. Now, the change in Indian Ocean surface temperatures is actually much larger than the global surface temperature change. That's about 1.2 degrees Celsius change, particularly in the equatorial Indian Ocean region. And that has changed the entire scenario even for India and also the continents around, like Africa, South Asia, East Asia, and even Australia. Yeah. And to put in context, the surface ocean temperature change is only 0.8 degrees Celsius. Yeah. So compared to that, the Indian Ocean has warmed up to 1.2 degrees Celsius in parts, yeah. So which is a huge change.
Yeah, and why does it matter for India that the surface water change, ocean temperature has risen so much?
Yeah, it matters a lot for India because, for example, one of the essential climatic factors or weather that drives a lot of things in India is the monsoon. Yeah, particularly the summer monsoon that we get during June to September that just passed by provides about 80% of the annual rainfall for India. So the water and food security, If you look at India, still, even though irrigation has been working for many states across India, still most of the agriculture, maybe 50 to 60% of the agriculture, is still rain-fed. Depends on the rain a lot. Yeah. So the food, water, and economic security of the country is dependent on this monsoon, which derives its moisture and source of energy from the ocean. Yeah. And that is just one example. Other example, like the extreme weather events like the cyclones, also derive this source of energy, the heat, the persistent heat, and the moisture supply from the oceans itself. So a lot of climatic changes that we see over land are actually influenced by changes over the ocean, and of course changes over the land as well.
Even though we've seen like 0.7 degree surface land temperature rise, we are already seeing an increase in extreme weather events over the past few years and decades, right? And that makes me wonder, like, if this is the case with 0.7 degree, what would be the case with 1.5 degree?
Right. So there is I would like to point a correction. So the changes in extreme weather events need not be tied to the local change in temperature. Yeah, so it could be tied to the global change in temperature. So it's the same with respect to carbon emissions also, whether it's US or Europe or Asia, China, India, and other countries emit anywhere across the globe. It's all connected through the atmosphere, which is like a sheet all covering the globe. Yeah, so the temperature changes elsewhere can control the weather conditions here as well. Similar to the carbon emissions anywhere, it's spread across. Yeah.
Right. So, okay. Right. So now we'll come back to the future we're trying to get to.
Mm-hmm.
So to understand that, how do scientists such as yourself forecast future climate?
Right. That is one of our major jobs, and that is one of the things that we have done through the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. I have been one of the lead authors for some of its recent reports as well, and the contributor. So what we do is we use the science that we know, incorporate that into what we call models, or what we call climate models. You can think of it as a set of equations or algorithms which represent the physical realm of ocean, atmosphere, biosphere, land, and all that, even the agriculture also, because all that feedbacks to the atmosphere climate system. Yeah, so we put that into mathematical equations, all this physics and even the biology and chemistry also, and run it in, and this needs to, all these algorithms means it's huge amount of data being exchanged at every grid point of the Earth system. Yeah, that needs a lot of computational power, and we have high performance computing systems or supercomputers. In fact, one of the fastest supercomputer in India is in our institution. It runs at 4 petaflops, which is like huge, yeah. So these computer models run on these supercomputing machines. Yeah, they take up the past data. Yeah. So we feed the past data into the physics that holds this in these climate models, and then these models fast forward the physics into the future. Yeah. So and if you want to see how the climate changes, one of the aspects we know is the carbon dioxide emission. Yeah. So what we do is we know we have an understanding of how the carbon dioxide has been changing in the future. What is the rate of change? For example, it's like between 2 to 3 ppm per year. Yeah. So we project that, or we increase the carbon dioxide emission in this model for the future, yeah, at a gradual level, day by day, throughout the year, and for several years and several decades into the future until 2100. Yeah. Now, this carbon dioxide, we know, has a physical and chemical property by which it absorbs the solar energy more and traps the heat. So that happens in this model, yeah, and that changes the climate of the future. Yeah. So that is what we do in a very simplified essence, yes, using these climate models to forecast the future. But the future depends on how we, how mankind or humankind decide on, you know, either reducing the carbon emissions in different ways. We call it the socio-economic shared social pathways for the future. Yeah, depends on how development-oriented or how sustainable life we take up. So based on this, we have different scenarios of these emissions also, and how the climate will develop in the future.
Okay. So does past data also include like past temperature and rainfall and what development was?
Yes. Yes.
There,
yes.
In the past,
we use that for that understanding. We use that for so all these models start from historical simulations from 1850s and the carbon dioxide emissions from that point, and the other kind of ocean atmospheric observations that we have already made as well.
So would it be right to say that the climate models are like video games that sort of let you experience, say, racing a car without actually having to race a car, but, and so climate models let you figure out what the Earth could be like in the future without having to actually destroy the Earth, so you feed in different scenarios to it?
Well, in the video game, we face that. I mean, even if you lose, you can always go back and correct it, and it's exciting. But here we have only this, most of the scenarios we see for the future are kind of worst case scenarios, which are decided by politicians, and which we do not, even climate scientists or common man, do not have much role in terms of decisions. Yeah, so that's a huge difference. I'm not excited by by the results of this game, this future game. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So my understanding is that the climate models, because they're so data intensive, that at the moment we are at the global level. Like most of them are global models, and that it's harder to do them at finer scales. Could you explain that a bit?
This is a bit low for me.
Sorry?
I'm not hearing it that well. I'm not hearing you that well. Can you speak once again?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Oh, it's perfect now. There was something was,
yeah,
off.
I lost. I think there was a loose connection. I lost you also for a bit.
Okay. So can you repeat your question?
Yeah. So you mentioned that your climate model takes the global Earth and grid points. So how at what distances are these points for which you are putting data? Like, how coarse is this?
Right. So climate forecasting has come a long way in terms of both the resolution or the or at what grid we churn out all the physics and the data and all. Yeah. So, and there has been several set of experiments which these IPCC reports are based on. The earlier one, the one before the current one, we call the CMIP. We call this experiment CMIP, or the Coupled Model Intercomparison Project. The previous one was the Phase 5. The current one is the Phase 6. The Phase 5 ran at a resolution of about 2.5 or 2 degree resolution, which roughly translates to, every degree translates to about 100 kilometer resolution on the grid, on the global grid. Yeah. So we were running on a 200 by 200 kilometer square kilometer resolution until the earlier reports. But currently with the CMIP 6, the Phase 6 of this set of experiments, we are running at a 100 by 100 kilometer grid resolution. That is for climate models, because it's quite intensive, because there are several scenarios, several agencies or institutions across the globe participating in it, because we cannot depend on one climate model from one institution, because there are multiple biases, yeah, due to the way the physics is incorporated, due to the resolution that model can support, or due to their computational resources. Yeah. So there are about 40-50 agencies right now running different climate models, and the current resolution is about one degree latitude and longitude. That roughly corresponds to 100 kilometer. But that's not the resolution of weather models, weather forecast models, because they are run only for a few days, not like hundreds of years by multiple agencies. So the weather forecasting runs at a resolution of 5 kilometer or lesser in by some agencies, and it continues to evolve and improve.
Okay, so how is the weather forecasting model related to the global to the climate model?
Yeah, so the weather forecasting models may not have all the Earth system components, like the biology. Some may not even have the ocean. It's generally some of the weather forecast models might only have the atmospheric component, and it's forced with the oceanic, what we call the initial conditions. So the initial state is given to the model, initial conditions of the ocean, initial conditions of the carbon dioxide emission, and other conditions are given to the model, which may have only the atmospheric component. So the atmospheric weather, like the clouds and the winds and all these factors, develop with respect to that. Yeah, because we need only maybe 1 or 2 days or 3 days. It depends on what kind of weather forecasting it is. If it is for the next 5 days, the many models do not consider the other Earth system components, like, for example, sea ice, or the interaction with the ocean, or even interaction with the land as well. Yeah. But we are seeing more and more that for weather forecasting, we need to include the ocean and other conditions as well. Yeah. And now modeling centers are slowly incorporating that. But even cyclone forecasting, many centers do not incorporate ocean and all. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So to forecast climate in mm-hmm. the future, for the future, mm-hmm. Do we have India-specific models also?
Oh, definitely. And we were one of the centers. Our climate change center in IITM was one of the centers to develop IITM, and that to Earth system model and a climate model for participating in the CIMIP or the IPCC model simulations. Yeah. So this was originally based on US model called the NSEP climate forecast system, which they use for seasonal forecasting, but we incorporated or modified the physics and also the input data that goes into this model in such a way that it can be used for Indian scenario representing the monsoon, both for seasonal forecasting or short-term forecasting, and also climate change projections for the future. Yeah, it was kind of a 10-year experiment where I participated in the early development of the model, and some of my colleagues in IITM has been relentlessly working on making it a climate model for the past decade or so. Yeah. Now it is a fully functional model participating in the IPCC simulations.
Right. So if I want to understand what goes into an India-specific model, so do you have to like figure out the physics behind monsoon here?
Exactly. The monsoon is the key factor. Yeah, because many global climate models do not represent the monsoon conditions well. So if you do not, if you develop a model and doesn't showcase or highlight the changes of monsoon in the future, there is no use for us. Yeah, like I told in the beginning, a futuristic, I mean, the monsoon like defines the life of the more than 1+ billion population of India, which is again growing into the future. Yeah. So a futuristic climate model should definitely be able to bring out the changes, salient changes in monsoon in the future as well.
Yeah. Does it also take into consideration the Indian geographic features as well and how that affects everything?
Definitely. The topography over India is important. And also, we have been incorporating, for example, for seasonal forecast also, we use the same, I mean, a different version of the same model, for example, for monsoon forecasting. And there, they incorporate the ocean observations near the India coast, which is available only for India. Yeah. So all this kind of input, both from the physics side and also from the data side, helps us provide better forecasts and predictions for the monsoon.
Right. And what scale is that at? Is that at? What resolution?
So the climate model is at a resolution of about 1 degree. That's again 100 by 100 kilometer. But the weather forecasting, so there are multiple forecasting done by the same model for weather forecasting and what we call the extended range prediction. So weather forecasting is for the next few days. You run the model and say how the weather will develop or a cyclone is coming up or anything like that. And we have extended range prediction beyond these 3-4 days. That's for like 2 weeks, how the weather is going to develop. And then we have the seasonal forecasting, particularly for the monsoon season, how the entire monsoon season will develop. So these forecasts are generally carried out at about 25 by 25 kilometer resolution or lower than that. Yeah. So the, and this keeps on improving with computational improvement in the computational and also our understanding of the physics. Because just by improving computational resources and resolution of the grid point, we cannot expect improvement of the forecast, because we also need to have the physics at that shorter scales. Yeah. For example, if we have a weather model at 1 kilometer or 0.5 kilometer, 500 meter resolution. Yeah, many things happen at microphysical levels for the clouds, and we still do not understand these microphysical properties and processes that happens, particularly with the monsoon clouds. A lot of experiments are being carried out, but we need to understand that and incorporate that physics and chemistry in this. Then only we can have those models at that higher resolution. Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, that's interesting. So at a city level, if we had to do this 1 kilometer,
right.
And every 1 kilometer, if we had to predict, then apart from clouds, could you give an example of what other factors would come into the understanding the physics of these changes?
Right, right. So for example, especially when you are talking about a city, the urban setup matters a lot for the local climate. Yeah. So that can change the temperature in the region. For example, if it is there is a lot of concrete, if the ground is concreted and the number of trees are less, the way the moisture develops or the way the heat is trapped in that city is totally different from if it is a rural area with a lot of trees and open space and ponds and lakes and all. Yeah. For example, one best example is if it's an urban setup. I will talk from the heat wave point of view, which we saw in Delhi recently, during April, May. So there was a 10 to 20 degrees Celsius difference. And this is for nighttime temperatures, okay? Nighttime temperatures between Delhi urban area and outskirts of Delhi. Yeah, that is up to 20 degrees Celsius. That is huge difference. And that is because, for you know that in the you get the solar energy or the sun's light during the daytime, right? And this gets trapped by the concrete skyscrapers and buildings. Yeah. At nighttime, this heat energy has to escape as what comes as shortwave energy during the daytime has to escape as longwave energy during the nighttime. But because it's all filled with concrete buildings which trap this heat, there is no escape. So the heat that comes during the daytime doesn't escape. Yeah. But in the rural areas, even if it gets heated during the daytime, it escapes because you know, a lot of open spaces and also the trees and the canopies provide a way to slowly for the heat to escape into the air. Yeah. So we need to incorporate all these factors, which is quite challenging in terms of how do we put that into mathematical equations, and also how do we even monitor have the data of all those information and incorporate this into models at a very finer scale. That is just one example of how it manifests in the atmosphere. Now, if you come to extreme rainfall, like for example in Mumbai or Bangalore or Kolkata or anywhere like that, then we again have to consider how that water is channeled through these land areas, how this concrete and the drainage and rivers and so on. Yeah. So all these factors are important if you talk about cities and forecasting the conditions over there.
And it seems like we don't really have like good maps of stormwater drains of our cities and in many of our cities.
Yeah, we do not even have elevation maps, proper elevation maps, or even if it is there, that is not shared well enough. Yeah. We need actually, that's one point. If you want to be futuristic about our forecasts and all at a finer scale for cities for tomorrow, we need a good interdepartmental cooperation, particularly sharing data, which do not happen, sharing data and information which do not happen in India. Yeah, that's a shame. Yeah.
Yeah, it's only when areas get flooded and then the blame comes, the blame game starts. And
exactly. Blame game starts and it's again interdepartmental. You throw the blame on the other department and they throw it on your department. Yeah, it goes on.
Yeah. So coming back to the future, is it possible to get to a future where we do have this kind of a hyper-local climate risk data available?
Oh, definitely. I think what local governments fail, but still researchers and scientists are working relentlessly trying to get data information from various different sources, yeah, on their own. So you can see scientists in cities, for example, IIT Bombay is an example, with whatever funds available for them, they're trying to measure the data. So there might be some available data from Met department and other departments, yeah. But for those locations or scales where the data is not available, they set up their own weather stations or other kind of measurements so that they can take up that data and prepare models fit for those regions. And for example, looking into the hydrology of that region, including the drainage system and all, and try to develop very localized models for regions. Yeah, I would say it's at a crude stage right now, but we do see that this coming up in a large scale in the future. I see many of my scientist colleagues in different cities working on similar efforts. For example, my colleague from IIT Bombay, Subi Mugosh, he had worked on a flood warning system for Chennai, which incorporates multiple elements like rainfall, the drainage, the high tide from the sea, multiple factors that affect a coastal city. Yeah. So these efforts are going on.
Okay. And can these then predict in the next, what would happen in the next 5 years, 10 years? Like, what times? At what time scales can these?
So these are not. I won't call them climate scale models. They are like early warning systems. So if you have the weather conditions right now, you can say for the next 3-4 days, if a coastal flood might happen at a very high resolution, you can have that kind of output. But the same model, if you connect it with the IPCC or the climate projections for the future, the same model has the potential to say if in the future we could have similar kind of coastal floods at a finer scale. Yeah, it is possible, but there hasn't been much effort on such a finer scale yet. But we do see that, some of my colleagues from IIT Kharagpur is working on a coastal flood model, compound coastal flood model. So, because in the future, we are going to see multiple extreme weather events act together. For example, sea level rising. So the sea level is rising millimeter by millimeter, centimeter by centimeter every year, every decade. Yeah. So if a flood occurs in the future compared to now, it will be a much more bigger flood because the sea level is rising. Yeah. And the future, the cyclones are also projected to intensify further. So the cyclones bring storm surges or waves of water onto the coast. Some of the recent cyclone Tote or cyclone Yas, they brought waves of the height of 5 meters to 10 meters, which is like quite high. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is going to intensify further in the future. So on top of sea level, you have a cyclonic storm surge of 5 meters, 10 meters and all. And on top of that, the same cyclones are bringing in more rains than ever. Yeah, because one of the property of global warming is that when the air is warmer, it can hold more moisture and for a longer time. Yeah, so cyclones are bringing more rains because of that, because there is more moisture available, the oceans are warm, more moisture is available, and they're bringing more rains. Yeah. So along with the storm surge flooding and the sea level rise, there is the rains from the cyclones also. Yeah. So that's also flooding the coastal region. So all this is intensifying. And if it happens along with a high tide like that happened over Odisha coast with cyclone Yas, it can flood inland regions like into several kilometers, tens of kilometers. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we see that already happening. This is something that IPCC projected that will happen sometime in the future. But for India, particularly for India coast, we see that already happening. Yeah, this kind of compound or combined extreme weather events. So your imagine tomorrow is already happening now for India. Yeah, whatever IPCC, if you look at the report and where it says that these things are going to happen in the future, it's already happening right now for South Asia or the Indian Ocean Rim countries. We are at crossroads where we need to decide now, act now, if you want to have any future for tomorrow. Which is why I say South Asia is like a poster child of climate change. We already see global climate change focused here. Yeah.
And some of our biggest cities like Mumbai and Chennai are on the coast.
Exactly. And they are facing very large, if you look at India, we see, because you talked about Mumbai, I would say there is a research from the last few years which shows domestic migration, okay? And this is happening from North India to the megacities, particularly the coastal megacities like Mumbai, Chennai, Kolkata, and even Bangalore also. Yeah. And why are they migrating? They're migrating because climate change has made the agriculture in the northern belts, for example, like Uttar Pradesh, Uttarakhand, Bihar, and all, where the population depended on agriculture, rainfed agriculture. So the rains, monsoon rains have changed. There are more droughts and floods. happening over this region affecting the agriculture. So they are not able to sustain themselves. So people are migrating from there to mega cities in search of jobs and other means of survival. Now, coming to Mumbai or other regions, they are facing different type of climate change. Yeah, storm surge from cyclones. Mumbai in the last few years so cyclonic effect coming very close to the city. Yeah, and Chennai back-to-back extreme rains and cloudbursts and all. Bangalore this year saw heavy rains. I mean, bringing the city to a standstill. Yeah. So these cities are facing, whether it's coastal or not, we see that even the impact of ocean is far-reaching. Sometimes systems develop from either from Arabian Sea or Bay of Bengal, and they cross inland, and they power a lot of water in a very short time span. And this is a very clear signal of climate change, because, like I said, the warm air holds more moisture for a longer time. So it doesn't rain for a long time. So we have long dry periods, intermittent with short spells of heavy rainfall events. So a season's or a month's rain, sometimes we get in a few days to a few hours. And that we see in far in Delhi, in Mumbai, in Bangalore, in Chennai, in Kolkata, everywhere across, Kerala floods. So all these events can be tied to that important aspect. Of course, there are other much more complicated changes in the monsoon patterns as well. But this we see more important for cities which are densely populated. Yeah. Take the case of Mumbai. Future Mumbai, now currently in 2020, Mumbai population is around 20 million. By 2050, it is projected to double to 40 million. Yeah, that is one Mumbai on top of another Mumbai. And the climate challenge also, by 2050, we might reach temperatures between 1.5 and 2 degrees Celsius. So all the extreme weather events that we see or saw until now in terms of heat waves, floods, droughts, cyclones are in response to that 1 degree Celsius change. Now, even as a climate scientist, I cannot imagine the tomorrow when it doubles to a 2 degrees Celsius. Yeah, obviously all this will intensify, but it's not a linear intensification. Yeah, by several fold, and the area exposed also will increase, and vulnerable population exposed will also increase. All the domestic migration, they are coming without means to have a proper roof on the top, so it can be blown away by a cyclone, or their houses and shacks can be flooded because they do not have the means to afford proper houses. Many of them occupy low-lying areas, and this is important to consider for the future, because real estate prices are already rising for high altitude areas. This has been shown for entire South Asia and East Asia, particularly coastal regions. Yeah. So we would see more and more in the future that the rich are occupying high altitude areas, and the poor and the vulnerable are occupying low-lying areas which are exposed to climate change. So that rich-poor divide will, unequal scenes, we call it, will be exposed severely in the future, near future. Yeah. Maybe it's already, we do not have that account of data. We do not have that habit of accounting.
I think intuitively it's already happening where...
Exactly, I think so.
Richer people are seeking out higher elevation areas in cities, and they're looking where it's not flooded previously. So they're occupying those areas.
Right. Yeah, if you look at some photos of Mumbai itself, it will show the high rises and the slums exposed... it's very clear.
And you mentioned that the rain comes in bursts where there are these days of very heavy rainfall, and I think that was true in Bangalore for many years, but now I think it's just constant rain here.
A lot of
rain constantly. It's still cloudy outside, and so we're like sort of It keeps my, I know my brother says that I'm not coming to Bangalore because it's always raining.
Right. I was in fact in Bangalore for a short while during one of the rains, not the major rain. And I saw how the city came to standstill. No cars or Ubers will take you or come to pick you up, and you cannot even go out. Yeah,
it's terrible. There are tractors taking people to the airport.
Tractors? Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, even without rains, Bangalore is kind of a standstill in terms of traffic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can imagine when it rains a bit, what happens.
Yeah. So at the moment, coming to my almost last question, when I mentioned this episode idea to a friend, she was looking for a place to move to and she got interested in this. And so her question is, at the moment, we don't really know how to go about looking for a place if you're concerned about climate impact.
Right.
So what would your suggestion or recommendation be?
So this again connects to real estate price. Maybe looking at real estate prices in India will give you the right, probably the safe place, but we would again see people building high-rise buildings on the beach, bang on the beach, right? If you ask me if there is a safe place in terms of climate change, particularly in terms of climate change in the future, there is no safe place in India for the future. We see across India impacted by climate change in different ways. And sometimes if you have heat waves, you cannot even run away. Yeah. Maybe the only thing you could have is air conditioning, which again produce more carbon emissions and goes into that vicious cycle. Yeah. So in general, I would say there is no safe place. But relatively, if you want to look at safer places to live in India, there are some new startups and efforts, scientific efforts to identify places where we can build a house or a building, or have resilient agriculture and all. So what these researchers or entrepreneurs do is that they try to take the past data and see the instances of extreme weather events, for example, if it is a coastal side, how inland the floods, the coastal sea rise have come, or the floods have occurred, how much the river has flooded, how inland has the cyclone winds impacted. Yeah. So all this combined affect coastal floods, for example, and that information they feed into their system. And also they potentially using the climate projections that I talked about, they see how it might intensify into the future. So in such a system, you can provide, it's a web-based, it can be a web-based application. One of my colleagues is working on that geospatial, it's called, their headquarters is in Pune. What you do is you can input the lat long or the GPS coordinates into that system, and it will tell if that location where you are going to buy a house can be impacted by a severe weather event or a flood or a strong winds in the next 10 years or so, and how, what were the instances? Was it flooded? If you're in Bangalore, was the ground floor flooded in the last 10 years or in the last 2 years? This information can be gathered. Yeah. So that these kind of efforts are in the nascent stage, and hopefully will be available even commercially, and hopefully open source also. Depends on how much data and efforts go into that, and which all departments, whether it's a commercial enterprise or a government enterprise or a research-based enterprise. So this is coming up in a large way. But there again, I would stress, different departments have to share that data so that this works seamlessly and in a much more accurate way. Yeah, it's possible. It's possible to do that. And it has already started. Yeah.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah.
So yeah, those were my questions. Anything else that you would like to add, or your last few thoughts on this?
For our tomorrow, I see that you know, we all are depending on the global community to come out and take action. When I say global community, it means the global nations and leaders, political leaders, to take action. The COP27 just got over. It talked about loss and damage from developed countries to developing countries and all, blah, blah. COP27 means it's like the end of the third decade of negotiations. Similarly, the IPCC reports have been, IPCC has been churning out reports for the last three decades. Yeah, we have been negotiating on how to control our emissions, how to take care of the climate and environment, but we have reached nowhere. And the IPCC report shows that we will reach 1.5 between 2020 and 2040. Now, that is not far tomorrow. That is the current decade between 2020 and 2040, okay? And between 2040 and 2060, we will reach 2 degrees Celsius, yeah? So, which means that we need to take urgent action for that tomorrow that we are imagining. And we see at a global scale, action is not taken. So as an individual, what kind of action can you take? That's a question that interests me, excites me. And I have been working with local communities. Now, why? Because we see that though climate change is global, the impacts are very localized. And so the adaptation measures, not the mitigation in terms of reducing carbon emission, the adaptation measures in terms of how to reduce the impact is also very local. Yeah, if you take Bangalore or Mumbai or a rural region in Maharashtra, which is landslide prone, the kind of environmental measures that you can take or sustainable development that you can take is totally different from locality to locality. And only the communities, local communities, know how to do that. And they have many times they have the political will also. So I have been working with communities, for example, in both in Maharashtra and Kerala, yeah, where local communities have come up. They work along with the administration, political leaders, and not only that, with scientists like me, with educational institutions like schools and colleges, yeah, to monitor climate and weather, monitor the rain, rivers, and the forests that they have, and the local environment, and take climate action. And this has been working in some regions. Yeah, so this kind of collective action is required for a sustainable, resilient future. Yeah, and that is quite important. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So that's it. So this episode will be out in maybe Jan, Feb. It'll take
Perfect.
Me a little while to put
right,
it together.
Right, right. Yeah.
But thank you so much. This was so, so good and helpful.
Definitely, definitely. And in between, you know, if you have any, after talking to other experts as well, and then while editing, you need some more inputs, I can provide that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'll send you questions if I need any clarification.
Sure.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Also, outside of this, I will be pitching a few other climate change stories to other places, so I'll be in touch with you for that.
Ha, definitely, definitely. And if you want contacts of experts in a particular, any expertise or science, you can just reach out to me.
Yes.
Yeah? Okay.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
Have a good.
Please send me the recording.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in the hope that it all.